Wow, what a roller coaster of a story Kevin Oakley is sharing on his print-on-demand journey. He's also got the bulk wholesale side. He's got the print-on-demand side. He wanted to differentiate his business, and we're going to hear a little bit about how he's done that. But we've got a couple incredible sponsors that always help us put this show on. First up, Multicraft Daddy. Multicraft_Daddy. Open up your Instagram app. Send him a DM. He sends out gifts every single week. And if you give him your email address, you also can get 10% off your first order. Multicraft Screen Printing and Digital Supplies have been around for over 50 years, providing the industry with top brands at competitive prices. So as usual, send your info over to his Instagram account and you'll be entered to win. Usually sends out a bunch of PMI tape every single week. So that is awesome. Next up, Stalls.com. If you're ready to take your custom apparel to the next level, Stalls is the leader in heat printing solutions. We were just at their new facility launch in Michigan. Unbelievable to see that in person. It's such a cool company. Whether you're a small business just starting out or an established brand scaling, Stalls makes the hustle easy. They're here to simply heat press to help you heat press and profit. So they got equipment, transfers, and support to help you out. Use the code HUSTLER20. That's 20% off your next DTF transfer order. It's HUSTLER20. GraphX Source. GraphX offers industry-leading outsourcing options for your shop by truly becoming a part of your team. They plug and play with Printavo, and they just manage the SEPs, mockups, creative art, digitizing, some back office admin and customer service. They've been doing it for 40 years. So they've been in the game for quite some time and they work with tons and tons of shops. If you mention the code PRINTAVOPOD24, that's 50% off your first order to give them a try. So that's PRINTAVOPOD24. EasyWay.com. This is the URL to use, EasyWay.com/giveaway. If you enter, this is actually a big giveaway, $250 every single month of product giveaway. So they've got this monthly giveaway program to give back to their amazing customers, $250 of product credit, easyway.com/giveaway. EasyWay makes reclaiming screens a whole lot easier with their EasyWay systems, chemicals, and equipment. All right, let's jump into the show. Kevin Oakley, welcome back to the show.
Nice. Good to be back.
Out of Las Vegas, Nevada. How's your week going?
Dude, it's good. So far, so good. We last week I went to a wedding. It was my wife's childhood friend. So, but yeah, it was good. We got delayed coming in like Sunday night. I think we left there at like 1, got home at like 4. And it's just like, I'm getting old. Like I can't bounce. Like it's taken me like up until today to like actually like bounce back. You know, like get like feel rested, all that good stuff. So anyways, but yeah, outside of that, everything's good.
At weddings, Kevin, are you like first on the dance floor, last off?
You know, I'm probably like in the middle, you know, I'm like, I'm not an early adopter, but you know, like as the drinks kind of start going, you know, yeah, I'll find my way there.
Are you like an air guitar guy or?
No. I think like I'm you know, I'm like a move my feet around a little bit. It's probably not, it probably doesn't look great. We'll just be honest. It's probably not the best.
A solid head nodder.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
How's the shop been this week?
Good. Yeah, we're busy. I mean, I'm sure with like you, Steven, it's like kind of getting your busy season as well. But this is like starting of October, especially for like embroidery, it just like ramps up like super heavy, as well as like all of our on demand, like we're starting to get into like gifting season. So that's been busy, and screen print's actually been like surprisingly busy as well. So yeah, everything's been good.
Why do you think embroidery is more busy now this time of year? Is it just because the clientele you guys do or what?
Yeah, it's like you know, generally speaking, like gifting is people try to do like a little bit higher end items. So thinking like jackets, polos, you know, hats and bags and like all that different types of stuff. So that really picks up, as well as like heavier items like jackets generally are embroidered. So as we're moving into like the colder season, we do more of those versus like t-shirts and things like that during the summer.
Yeah. How do you think about like the financial side of the busier season versus slower? Like, is it, we can stack more cash now?
Yeah, I would say definitely like these last 3 months, like account for a huge amount of our overall profits through the year. We've worked hard, especially like with Merch Loop, like we've been able to kind of like make things a little bit more consistent than they used to be, like when we were just like doing bulk screen print and as well as doing contract. Like there's a lot of peaks and valleys there. So it's like peaks are great, like you're killing it. But then when you're valleys, you can't lay off your entire team, right? Because people have bills, they have things that they need to do. So like you have to kind of bridge that gap of like, all right, I guess we're cleaning the shop. You know, we're doing like all these things that aren't creating necessarily like any revenue. It's good to do, but that's where you kind of lose a lot of those profits. So when we're even doing a little bit more of like overtime and adding some additional like seasonal staff, like these last 3 months are probably about like 40 to 50% of like our profits for the whole year. And then like the thing about it is then you go into quarter one next year where that's probably like the worst quarter for our profits, just historically speaking. So it's kind of like we're like squirreling away like all of our nuts like right now, and then kind of try to ride that out through at least like February. And then February starts to like pick back up and get a little bit better. But we just definitely don't want to like be laying off too much of our staff. And then obviously you have salary people who are getting paid regardless, right? So
Kevin, you post on LinkedIn, you're a great LinkedIn follow, you're very consistent, very entertaining.
Oh really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so you posted last couple weeks ago, about 18 months ago, we made a bold decision to pivot Merch Loop from a traditional print-on-demand platform into a done-for-you swag store platform. And now you have launched over 2,000 company stores, 100 new stores just in the last week. Holy shit. All print-on-demand. Walk us through this. I think people listening to this are going to stop and be like, what? 2,000 online stores running.
Yeah, it surprised me too. Like when we ran the report and we were like, oh my God. Cause you know, sometimes like we're all kind of like our heads down and like we see like the revenue numbers, but we don't necessarily see like some of these other like underlying metrics that we probably should be tracking a little bit better. But we ran the report, we're like, oh my God, like that's a lot of stores. So kind of going back, we started like really exploring print on demand probably in like 2017-ish. Of just like what, like we kind of kept hearing about it. I got asked about it by like about 5 of our clients. So I was like, man, I really think I need to try to look into this, figure out what's going on. And kind of just started down that rabbit hole. Like, what does that entail from like a decoration standpoint, a tech standpoint, and just all of those things, because there is a lot in there. So we first realized, okay, we got to get into DTG. We weren't into DTG at the moment. Because that was just the way that print on demand was mostly done at that time. So got into that. Then we started building out our tech stack, which was just something kind of new to us. Like we'd been building websites, but we had never built like a full in software from, okay, we got to take the order from storefront all the way down to, printing the product, you know, on demand. So that was just like a whole journey in itself.
Wait, what do you mean? You guys built your own e-commerce solution that ingests the orders from wherever they're coming from, process payments, so, like all this stuff?
Yeah. So we built a Shopify app, as well as we built like our own store builder platform. That was like the initial like iteration of Merch Loop. So, and like that took like a couple years, you know, just to, because again, we're not like traditional, like our background isn't software engineering, right? So that took a lot of like trial and error and figuring things out. So that took a couple of years just to get launched. So we launched all that at the beginning of 2020.
And didn't you have engineers or like a team of engineers or something, if I remember?
Yeah, we still do. So we have 3.
In Vegas or overseas?
They're overseas. Yeah. So they're overseas and we've had them since we started. Since about 2018. So yeah, so they've been super helpful and super great, but you know, obviously like it takes a lot of like logic for us to explain like, okay, this is like how this needs to work. Like these are all these things as well as like doing the front end work. And yeah, so we started, then we launched that at the beginning of 2020. Previously to that, we had been doing like manual integrations with people. So just doing like just straight API connections. But we didn't have like a necessary like a front end, like thing like a Printful or a Printify, something like that, where you could just drop in your logo, build the product, do all those things. So that's what we built. And I think like the biggest flub at that time was like we thought print on demand was the business model, right? Like we were like, okay, print on demand, that's just like our new line of business, right? But it's just like saying going into business and being like screen printing's my business. You know, it's like, well, no, not necessarily. Like we're selling products, right? Like, and it's a way to produce products to sell like logos onto them. So I think that was like our biggest like mistake. And also another mistake of just like the hubris to be like, oh yeah, we're gonna compete on the Shopify marketplace with Printful and Printify, who've been doing it since like 2015, 2016, had been pretty established, right? So there was just like a lot of learning just moving into that space that and we invested like a lot of time and a lot of money into that to where we're like, okay, well, like let's just kind of keep going.
How much money do you think you put into the engineering? Not little on the time up until that point.
Probably up until 2020, I'd say probably like 350 to 400,000 spent just to get to that point. Because like thinking back to that time, like, I mean, even just think right now, right? Like, let's just say if anybody who's listening or Steven, like if you're like, okay, I want to get into print on demand right now, there's like a few options to choose from, right? Like you could maybe go to Fulfill Engine or one of these like off the shelf things. At that time, there was like nothing, you know, there was really like, you know, there was links that you could work with, but that was really just like,
yeah, or Smake or one of those kind of old fashioned
ones. Exactly. But those were really just like at, like work, like order management on the floor, right? There was no WMS. I think maybe Smake had WMS eventually. But yeah, like links didn't have WMS. So like we also had to like completely overhaul our ERP system, right? So to allow for us to like, call into our WMS and do like all these things. So there was just like a ton of like ground level, like infrastructure rework that we had to do. Cause at that time when we started, we were on Shopworks. And that's like built on FileMaker. So we ran into just like a host of like problems of like, oh, we can't.
Dude, you're like pushing uphill hard.
Yeah. So we're like, we're trying to get features built. We're trying to like get calls made into it. And we're like, all right, this just is not it. We have to go to like, you know, so we moved to Impress because it's just realistically at the end of the day, it was just because it was built on like a SQL server. So it was like SQL based system to where we're like, okay, well we could build around that, you know, like we could build tables to like talk to each other essentially. And my partner Shane could go into a, like, he could talk for days about all this stuff, but.
And like to understand it between the lines, it sounds like because for the background, Stoked on Printing is a business you and Shane started. That's like the bulk kind of traditional wholesale screen printing embroidery side. And the thought was, okay, the industry's pivoting to print on demand. We need to develop this to be first, or, you know, just to meet our customers' needs better, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So like with like Stoked, like, we historically, like most of our volume was like through contract printing, like for promotional product distributors, right? That was just like our bread and butter and like how we worked really well with them. And that's going to come up here later on in the merch loop story. But the problem was like we wanted to build our own direct line of business to our customers just because contract is really great. And it's still an important part of our business today. But like if POs don't come in today, they just don't come in, right? It's like really hard to like forecast and plan and do all those things when you're just like super reliant on a third party to produce orders for you. So we'd always historically really wanted our own channel that we could just create our own demand, right? So that we didn't have to be so reliant on you know, a third party contract customer. But it was just like, it's just really hard. Like when you're just like, hey, I produce bulk products, right? Like to new customers are like, yeah, like you and, you know, a ton of other people to where it's like, you have to have like a unique identifier or a unique like value proposition to come to customers with, for them to even like entertain you. Right. So you could, you know, a lot of people compete on price, right? We see all of those.
So this was the differentiator for you guys.
This was like, our thought was like, this is how we will add something different to our customers, like, lives or like their ecosystem, that we could then also, you know, translate that into some bulk as well. Right. So it wasn't just going to be the whole thing.
But you really thought like, I'm going to be the next Printful.
At the beginning. Yeah. You know, like, I think just, you know,
isn't that interesting where you're like, okay, we're going to go down this path. We're ready to invest hundreds and thousands of dollars. And to us, that feels like a lot, but to these mega companies, they're like, yeah, we do that in a week.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. That's how much I just spent on, like, a printer, you know?
Yeah. It's like cute little project over there, you know, but like, how, and then if I'm understanding this correctly, the pivot for Merch Loop was, we're not going to try and we're not going to try to be Printful for everyone. We're going to try and be this for our own subset of customers, and we're going to handpick the clients that can actually go on there. And that's what makes these 2,000 corporate customers that you have now.
Yeah. So pretty much coming like up to date. So we launched 2020, COVID hit, we became a partner with Printify. So we are like a print provider on the Printify network that we are to this day. You know, that went really good, and then it went kind of poorly for us. The demand spiked dramatically just due to COVID. It was just a crazy year, right? Like, a lot of political things happening. So there was a lot of political t-shirts, a lot of stay at home. So a lot of people are starting brands, doing all that stuff. So demand just like went through the roof. Like, at one point we were running 10 Brother GTXs, like 20 hours a day, 7 days a week, you know?
Did you think you were making money? Like, did you think at that point you were like, okay, we've hit something, we're going to, cause like, that's a good and bad problem, right? But like, you made a decision to get on Printify and be a partner there. You had Merch Loop running. Did you think everything was gravy? Like, what forced you to say, no, we need to rethink again?
Yeah, so it was good. The problem with DCG inherently is that it's an expensive printing process. And so for us, coming from screen print, that's traditionally like a pretty cheap printing process. Like, COGS are very low on screen print, whereas with DCG, COGS are pretty high. We kind of got caught up in like, oh shit, like, we are like underpricing ourselves quite a bit here because we're not taking into account how high our COGS are getting. And then there's quite a bit of labor. There's a lot of those things that it was good while the music was playing, but when the music stopped, we were kind of like left holding a bag, right? And what I mean by the music stopped was, by the time 2021 came around, a huge influx of other people got into DTG and started getting into Printify's marketplace, which was a very smart strategic decision for Printify to not be so reliant on like a handful of providers. But what that did was that spread out the demand over a lot more providers, as well as the overall demand went down for just like
the
those
pricing
traditional...
change too.
And exactly. And so with Printify, it's a marketplace, right? So you're now competing on price. So the best, you know, it, like, there's a saying, like, it doesn't pay to be the second to cheapest option, right? You either want to be the cheapest or the most expensive. Somewhere in the between is where you get killed. And we just couldn't find ourselves being either one. We moved to being like one of the more pricier options, which helped, but it's just, we lost a ton of our volume, right? So then we went down to like, okay, now we're running like 9 machines for one shift. And now it's like, okay, now we're running 4 machines for one shift, or, you know, so it just kind of get, but the CapEx, we spent a ton of money. Like, even on that side, we probably spent like 500 grand on just equipment, right? So the CapEx and payments on like those types of things is high, right? Like, you need to be churning out, you know, at least like 1.5 shifts, you know, every day to be doing good, right? So when you start having idle machines, you have all these things. So we then took another pivot to like just working directly with like e-commerce brands, which was okay. And then finally, we just had one of our bigger e-commerce, like retail customers, was like, hey, we can't just pay for the shipping anymore. We're moving all the production in house. And like, at that time, I was just like, all right, I'm done with this side of print on demand. So I was like, hey, do you want to just buy all of our stuff? And they're like, well, yeah, cool. So like we were able to sell like a lot of our equipment to them. So
what? All those printers that you bought?
All the Brothers and Firefly.
The Firefly. Yeah. So we sold all that. And we bought DTF because we're like, all right, cool. That's like a much more cost effective option. We started talking with STS and we got samples and we're like, dude, this isn't like that bad. Like, unless you're like dealing with high end e-commerce, like this is not going to be a problem.
So you got rid of all the DTG machines, not just
all of them. Yeah. So,
and bought printers.
We bought a DTF printer. So I think that was at the end of 23. Yeah. So we transitioned completely.
I was watching this video the other day that Jeff Bezos, and he says one of his other leaders told him he has 100 ideas. He can come up with 100 ideas within an hour to destroy Amazon. Jeff Bezos has that superpower. And I just like watch it over and over again of like, he has so many ideas he could destroy his company. It sounds like over the past 5-7 years on your journey, you guys have made some really hard, intense, like these are intense decisions. Rip out ShopWorks and put in Impress. You know, we're going to pivot from building this and we're going to go do that. We're going to, you know, we're going to not just, we're going to just focus on these company stores. We're going to, and there's other things you have done. You know, you've brought in leadership, you've restructured your facility. How is the decision-making process for you and Shane? Because those are like, those could have been catastrophic and you're still here today.
But the thing is, the one thing to note is that those decisions were the correct ones, even hindsight at the time. It's just the market has changed so quickly too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, but talk about like the decision-making framework to take a bet and then to pull that bet back and pivot it. Like, what's that like for you and Shane?
Yeah, I think Shane and I, like over the last year, we've done like a lot of like work on like a, which we could talk about later, but just like more personality tests, like how we like, how our personalities like interact well. And we, it just turns out like just luck of the draw, like we actually have a lot of traits that could build off of each other, right? Like we're very different, but we do intersect at some really crucial like places where like we both can see each other's side. We could both come to an agreement. We could both like allow each other to take that decision, and like the other one will, we move forward with it. We don't like come back and be like, hey, I told you so. It's like, we're all just trying to make the best decisions with the information we have at that time. And I think at some of those junctures, it was just like the pain became too much, right? It was like, this is just too painful. Like we cannot continue on, because it was, you know, for Shane, he's more production side. He's like, Kevin, you got to go out and get more e-commerce people. You got to go out and get more of these things. But I was just like, dude, this is like diminishing returns. Like the more people we bring in, at some point it becomes profitable. And sometimes it doesn't. So there's, dude, like it was really hard. I would say like the last 4 years were probably like the hardest years of my life, just because to your point, there's just so many hard decisions that had to be made like on a daily, weekly basis. Like, and just like constant waves of bad news that like at a point you're just like, man, is it just time to like give up, you know? And maybe some days we might have given up, but it just would have been too hard, right? Like there's too many liabilities, there's too many things to unwind, that it's like, fuck, let's just keep pushing through, you know? Like let's just keep going, let's just keep our heads down, you know? And like there's like a quote from Scott Galloway said one time, he's like, even during the shitty times, he's like, I kept my sails up. You know, he was like, the water was still, you know, there's no wind, but I kept my sails up, you know? And he was like, the second a freaking gust of wind came through, I was able to get going. And I was like, I think that was like a really good metaphor for like Shane and I at the time. Like there was no wind, the water was dead, but we kept our sails up. Like we kept working towards like fixing the problem. We kept coming in day after day after day, even when it was like shit news, just to essentially get to the point where it's like, we get to the point now where it's like, oh, we have 2,000 stores. And it's like, I look backwards, and not to throw another quote out, but like with Steve Jobs, it's like, you can only connect the dots looking backwards. Like I couldn't have ever gotten to the point where it's like, I to say like, oh, we're going to launch 2,000 stores. It's like the master plan wasn't as great as that. But looking backwards, every single one of those failures, every single one of those things that I learned stacked on top of each other to get us to like where now we have those 2,000 stores. And like, so like that was kind of a meandering way of just saying like, I think some days like we had to make the decisions because they just had to be made. Like there was no other choice to make on those. So,
Kevin, how like you guys have been in business now, what, 14 years? Something like that?
Yeah, 15 just years? About like, yeah, 15 years.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. For looking no more than like 30 years old, it looks like you're crushing it. you've obviously done something right to get here. How many times has your back been up against the wall financially where you're like, oh shit, we could go out of business? Do you have any of those like very vivid memories of, or have you guys always had like good reserves and been able to take smart bets?
No. I would say over the last like 4 years, it was like touch and go, like just about every like 3 months, you know, like there was a point where we were not profitable, which, you know, before then, like in contract, like we were always profitable. Like we were very good at contract printing. We got processes down. Like Shane's a very process oriented guy. So like we were able to scale that, do that and do that really well and do that profitable to where we got into this like CapEx hell where, we had a lot of like, you know, infrastructure costs, equipment costs, dev team, like all these costs that we never had before. And when the revenue isn't there, you know, there's definitely no profits to pay for those things. So that just like sunk into our reserves, like very fast and very quickly to where it's like, now you're starting to like string out vendors. And now you're like, you know, working out a way weekly to just be like, okay, like first things first is we got to pay payroll, right? Like we have to make sure that everybody here gets paid. So you're kind of like playing like a little bit of a game where you're just like shuffling things around just to make sure that like, okay, we're going to make sure we make payroll and we may stretch our vendors out another week or we may figure out a way to do this. But, it was quite difficult. And we finally got back to profitability, last year, you know, so from 2020 to 2023, it wasn't like we were like it hugely in the hole, but it was not like we were just bleeding into the reserves that we had built up over the years. So
do you think that now the decoration method, because it seems like the business model is similar, it's just a change from DTG to DTF. Now it's profitable. Do you see any larger pivots having to happen soon, or can you continue to iterate on this model?
We could kind of go back to pretty much last year. So like, as I said in the post, like about 18 months, 20 months ago, it's just like one of those things, like I was just driving and it just like hit me in my head. Like I was like, it was one of those things where I was like, man, I cannot believe I have not thought about this yet. But we had already been working so much on the corporate side with all of our PPD, like promotional product distributors, that we're like, dude, you know what we do really well is corporate apparel. And I was like, why don't we just try it on demand inside of corporate apparel? You know, like there's not very many people out there doing it. Like every solution is piecemealed. You know, there's like people who are distributors and then they go, you know, work with OMG stores who maybe they send those orders to a, you know, a Debeau or to like, you know, a Stakes or something like that. And then, or they have, you know, now you have a Fulfill Engine that could work with them, but there's nobody that's like, oh, you can go acquire customers, build the stores, decorate the products, ship them out of your own facilities. And we're like, we can do each one of those. Because my partner, Clayton, who's a minority partner with us now, is, we worked on a ton of outbound strategies and marketing during those like 2 year period where things were not going well. We're like, dude, let's just freaking go out there and like, let's see if we can acquire customers, like even at the hardest way of just being like, we sell bulk t-shirts. And we had some success there. So we're like, let's just take the strategies we learned there. Let's just take the technology that we built with on demand And now let's just package this in a different way to speak to a different type of customer, which was just like corporate buyers, right? So just like people inside of businesses, like human resource companies, marketing companies. And let's just say.
And that hit pretty well.
It hit. Yeah. It hit like really quickly, actually. You know, so it was like the first time I feel like we were chasing the boulder instead of pushing the boulder up the hill, right? Like it, like we were being dragged by the momentum and like by the demand, right? Versus us trying to push the demand. That was like, that's like the precipice of like, okay, now that's how we get to 2000 stores in 18 months, was just kind of like repackaging and like realizing like, oh, print on demand's like the decoration in which we do this, but it's not the business model. The business model is still selling products, you know? So.
One of the things I was going to say, Kevin, is while you and Shane are re-gutting this entire thing, you also were very aggressive in learning sales, creating an outbound strategy, building out a sales team. I mean, you guys do old school, hardcore outbound sales. And I think listeners that are hearing this, it's not like you can just, you know, build it and they will come. You were building two machines at the same time. You were building a sales, you were building a production machine, a technology platform, and you were also building a sales machine, right? Which like you guys also went from Salesforce to HubSpot. Like you're gutting everything, right? Can you talk about the sales machine that you guys built? Because I think that's also something like without outbound sales and a true pipeline and doing this, none of this really works, right? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you're totally right. You like, again, going back to it, it's like, it is one of those things where you have to build the demand first or also, right? And doing that, there's a couple ways that we went about it. Like, so we went to your point, like we went like straight outbound, right? Like cold calling, cold emailing, showing up at people's doors. And with that, what we did before then was we spent a lot of time talking about offers, right? So like, you know, he could be a divisive guy, but like, I really, like, if I would recommend anybody listening, like go just listen to and go read Alex Hormozi's books, because it's very tactical things that you could just implement right away. But, you know, he talks a lot about offers, right? Like, what are you going to offer somebody, right? Because I think a lot of people in this industry, we have word of mouth. We have all these things. Like we have these discount offers to like, but it's like, dude, to really get somebody to want to work with you, you have to give them something, you know, like you have to give them a taste to figure out, are they going to like working with you? Do they like your products? Are you going to do well with them?
What's an example that clicked like in our space with like, cause I remember like he does the irresistible offer. So like something that you just, it's so good.
Yeah. So initially before we were doing the stores, we did 5 free hats. So what we did was we would give customers literally 5 free hats. And what we did was we just found, I think it was like an auto cap or, I don't know, something that was really cheap. We were maybe getting it for like a couple bucks. And then what we were doing is we were laser engraving patches. So it had like a value add component, but realistically the cogs on that were really low. So it was really easy to do. So we were able to like get that cost around like, I don't know, $12, $13 of costs that we were talking with customers. We're like, hey, like we'll give you 5 free hats to give us a shot. And people were like, okay, cool. You know, but with that, then we had follow-up things of like, hey, you know, here's some other offers to like follow along with that. So that like hooked them. And then we came back with some other things. So that had really good take rates.
The 5 free hats was just to say, hey, create a store, or as in, hey, take a call with us, or?
Yeah, exactly. Just like, hey, can you pay attention to us for a minute? So this was before the stores. So this was still like while we were just trying to sell bulk products.
I'm going to share something with you. So like I get messages in my LinkedIn every day of like software and people that want to sell us stuff. And I've been getting these messages from this guy trying to sell us NetSuite. It's like an Oracle product. I have not responded. We went to the same school. And yesterday I walk into our office, and actually this time last week, I walk into our office and they're like, Steven, you and our CFO, you guys got packages, you got boxes of chocolate. And it's literally shipped to me like chocolate truffles. I was like, okay. I open it up and it's like this beautiful, it's like vacuum packed. It's got like a cooler thing on it. Like this thing was not cheap whatsoever. And it was just a note from him saying like, hey, I know we went to school together. Let me know if you're ever thinking about us. And it was like, they must have spent, I don't know, it was like $50 a package. And you think about it and you're like, you know, Oracle and NetSuite just spent $150 for the opportunity to talk to me. And I have never responded to them. And it's just like, whoa, if that's what the big guys are doing, five free hats is like no brainer, right? But I don't think enough of us do that.
Dude, you're totally right. There's like a guy from like, it's a company called Paycom. Dude, that guy's got to be at like $600 to $700 of free gifts that he sent me. Like he sent me like AirPods, he sent me Bluetooth speaker, he sent me like tons of stuff, you know, because there's one thing that I think that that like SaaS, all those people, what they like in services businesses, what they understand is LTV, right? So lifetime value of a customer. So they're like, hey, Steven could literally be like a $500,000 LTV client. And our gross margins are 50%. So dude, we could spend probably like $4,000 on Steven to get him over the finish line, if that's what it takes. And I think within our business, we also can have some pretty high LTV clients, right? So some of our clients you could pick up are like, you know, they could spend like $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year. And if you could keep them for 4 years, you know, like that's a pretty substantial amount of revenue. Like you should be thinking about, hey, I'm willing to spend $150 to get this customer. You know, if you could segment out those people correctly. So
was there something else also from the Hormozy books that helped you guys on the sales or outbound end?
I think just demystifying everything and it just being action-based. Like it's something I talked with Kevin Baumgart like quite a bit, but it's just like, you know, input equals output, right? And you're going to need a lot of input to get an output. So if you want like 3 new customers, like you may have to go out and talk to 1,000 new people, right? Just to find 3, you know, and that could be even like a small rate. That could be even like a good, like a great ratio to have, you know? And I think before I thought about it very preciously about like reaching out to leads and like list building and like all this stuff. And it's like, dude, like do not get precious about it. Come and do the task and do the output. So like we set up like a system where it's like on Monday, we cold call 100 people. On Tuesday, we follow up with all those people on an email. And then we also build a list for the next day to go out and physically go talk to people. And you can automate a lot of this too. Like you can build out email workflows and stuff, but there is something to be like something. There is something when you have like a list of really high value targets to be very personal, like Steven, like the guy, the fact that I was like, hey, Steven, we went to school together. You know, here's these box of chocolates. Like that just made it more personable for Steven. And it's like, so there's like a lot of those things that you really want to have that personal touch if it's a high value person, but you should also have like a spray and pray strategy. So that could be, you know, email campaigns, that could be Meta ads, that could be Google ads, that could be Reddit ads that are just constantly churning and spraying out your name to people. Because something I also took from Alex Hormozy is like, dude, nobody knows who you are. Like as much as we live in our own worlds and as much as we live in our own businesses and we know our own businesses, the general public does not know who you are. Like, you know, there's 8 billion people out there. Like if 100 people, if you have 100 customers, like that's nothing, you know? So it's like, you can just taking that into account, like it just makes it, it makes it a numbers game. It's just like, if I just get in front of these many people, I'm going to get my outcome, you know? But the hard thing is just the taking rejection, taking people being upset at you, like for calling them or going into their business or emailing them, those types of things. Like you just have to build the muscle just to get over that. And know, like, it's just a numbers game.
Kevin, you, I was filling out the inquiry form and it forwarded, or I was like, check out the pricing or whatever. And so I just wanted to share this because I thought it was kind of interesting. So you know, there's like a free plan, $200, $199, $499, $1,000 a month or so, and they include different amounts of functionality. How does this, like, does this, you find that something like this works well with your customer base, or how did you come up with this?
Yeah, for sure. So, so now kind of going back to, okay, creating an irresistible offer for stores. Like, we went back to the drawing board with this customer base and we're like, man, wouldn't it be cool if we could just offer people a free store? You know, like, no strings attached. It works well. You could do embroidery. You could have digital products or printed products, UV products, hard goods, all those types of things. And like, they just don't have to pay for it. And so we built out like, we built out that free store option, as well as then we built out like a full like pitch deck, right? So we like try to get people onto calls. Like, that's our thing. It's like, we want to get on a call with a person because that shows like a higher level of interest for them. We could talk to them and try to upsell them into other tiers. But at the end of the day, like, our main focus is to sell product, right? So we wanted to make sure that that free store is still kick ass. Like, it still works really well. And so we have a lot of customers who are like, dude, I have 200 employees. Like, I don't need to pay $200 a month or $500 a month for a store. Like, you're offering me 20 products. That works totally fine for us. And we're like, cool, because they, you know, 200 employees, they're on average probably spending $50 a year on them. You know, so like, we're like, cool, that's like a 10 grand customer.
Got it. And then the other ones that are like 1,000 employees, they could care less about 200 a month or 500 a month, and just...
Exactly.
To be able to manage like all the swag for employees or uniforms.
Yeah. And part of the thing with the paid tiers is that there's a level of customer that expects to pay, and they won't trust you if you're just only offering things for free, you know? So it's like,
dude, you have segmented the customer so well in yes, you're correct. Right. Cause if you undercharge certain customers, we've all experienced this. They kind of, look at you a little funny, like, this is not going to help me. You're just not like, why is it so cheap?
Exactly. Yeah. So we have each one of those that, because again, like, do you like, we'll be on calls and we're like, oh, they're, you know, 400 person company. And they're like, yeah, we're thinking enterprise. And it's like, okay, cool.
Right.
You know, because there's a certain level of like, enterprise. Even. Yeah.
We like are enterprise.
Like, yeah, we're exactly. Yeah. We have the enterprise solution. So where it's like, and with those stores, we build some pretty badass stores. So like, we have a full store building team. So like, we spend a lot of time on those stores and like build out really custom features for those customers. So it really is like a bespoke option for them. But the free one, it's like, that's cookie cutter, you know?
The cool part about it is if they're willing to pay you $1,000 a month for at least 12 months, right? That's $12,000 of subscription revenue that can go to covering your staff to actually build this out. And so if they don't even hit thresholds, you're like, okay, we're just a hosting website. You're like GoDaddy.
Exactly. At that point,
and there's
exactly. So like that's the nice thing about that. Cause it's like with the free one, we have that down. Like, we have the process, like we're rebuilding, going back to always like, gutting things. We're actually like completely re-overhauling like our store building process by the end of this year. But so it'll be even faster. So it's like, it really doesn't take much time for us to build a free store. So, but with the paid ones, we do. But to your point, after we build it, the initial, like, that's just revenue that just comes in every month.
And then you're not as reliant on the success of the store if they're paying for it, because you know it's going to ebb and flow throughout the year.
Right? Exactly. That fills in some of those gaps. Yeah.
Could you give a percentage of the 2,000 stores you have? How many of them are actually paying a monthly?
I'll keep that a little bit more private. But it's not huge. It's not like a huge percentage, I would say. You know,
gotcha. Because, but it's there.
Yeah. In one of the things like to think about it is I could juice that number like heavily. But the issue is like you know, going back to like EOS, those types of things, like, what's our core focus, right? Our core focus is to sell product, right? So like, I would say our free store has too many features, right? We allow too much to happen inside of a free store. But the reason we do that is just because at the end of the day, we want to sell product. We don't want to sell SaaS. Like, SaaS is good. And we love that component of it, but I don't want a day where I'm like sitting around being like, oh, we don't have enough work, but we have great SaaS revenue. So that SaaS revenue is going to the people. You know, I'd rather just build like the machine of like us putting out the product. So it's been a constant thing of talk internally of like, okay, do we nerf the free store to push people into the paid stores more? You know, and that's just a strategy thing. And that could change. You know, one day we could literally wake up and just be like, fuck it. Like, we don't want to do, like production anymore. We'll just like become a SaaS company, you know. But
I think what's really cool is like, why is Costco so successful? It's not Costco's products, it's Costco's membership model.
It's a membership. It's like, yeah, totally.
$6 billion in membership revenue.
Yeah. Well, and on top of that, like, I guess, you know, to kind of like not give away too much, but like, we have some really, really cool software that we're building around the stores, right? So like the store is like the vehicle for in which like people interact with us, right? But behind the scenes, we're building some really, really cool features and functionality that we're going to be rolling out at the beginning of the year that we'll be able to charge like, you know, seat pricing, right? So like, as if you have 200 employees, we're charging per seat for some of these features, or we'll just bulk price it in, you know? So like we have some like additional ways that we are getting a little bit more towards like HRIS software, you know, like so human resource software versus just like a swag platform.
That's amazing. Congrats on the journey so far and like the ability to make so many pivots. I mean, that can break some people. So I appreciate the honesty with it.
Kevin, can you, before we jump, can you talk a little bit about like EOS? You've got a Fabric group.
Yeah. Welcome to Fabric. You guys are welcome a few to months Fabric. In now.
Here's the shameless plug. We got the best group in the world. Can you talk a little bit about using external coaches? Now you're hiring some high level leaders. You've hired like implementers. You're part of different groups. Can you talk about what you do as an owner to fulfill yourself and get the resources and help you need?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think like I could just speak to us, but I think it could resonate with other like shop owners and things like that. Like we spend a lot of times on the processes to build or to like get product out the door, right? So we check in things, we print it, we do all that stuff. But at least for us, we did a really poor job of actually structuring and processing the organization, right? So like who speaks to who and like how do we have workflows and all those types of things where it was like an extended family member essentially. We were talking with him about doing some business and things like that. And he's like, yeah, I'm like also like an EOS implementer. And we're like, I read the book, but it didn't hit for me at the time. I was like, we should revisit that. And he was like, yeah. And he was like, if you want to hire me, I could come and implement and like, you know, we could see if this is the right fit. Which was like probably one of the best decisions we've ever made because now like he was like, send me your org chart. And we're like, sure. And it was literally like Shane and I at the top. And then like it was hilariously wide. Like you had to have like an ultra wide monitor to like get everything on the one screen. He's like, we'll fix this. And so went through the process of implementing that. We started that. We actually rolled everything out August 1st. So it's been different, but like, I'll just give you an example. We hired somebody, and within a couple months, we were able to flesh them out that they just weren't the right seat. Great person. You know, like I don't regret like hiring them as like from a personality standpoint, but they just weren't right for the seat. And we would have never gotten there that fast without EOS. So super helpful on there, but, and then going to like Fabric, like, I just think we can live in our own heads and like we can live in our own like worlds that it's like we think some of these things that are happening to us are unique. But then once you get into a group with like-minded people or people going through, especially with Fabric just being so focused around our industry, you know, you start to see like, oh, they're going through the same thing as I am. And like then they kind of talk about how they got through it. And, you know, like and again, with like, Michael, who's our who runs those meetings, you know, from an EOS perspective, like he's just so good at like hey, let's dive into that. Or like, let's figure that out. Or who in this room has had that problem? And then there's like two or three people who raise their hand, and you get like two or three different perspectives on like how to solve that problem. And somewhere in there between your experience and their experience, like you're able to kind of like come to some pretty good resolutions, like that you can really only get if you're going to like a like ISS or a trade show and you're like talking shop with people, you know? So it's like a really nice way to like do that on like a monthly basis, but then also being in, you know, the Slack channels, like seeing what people are working on and being able to provide value to them as well as getting value from other people.
Kevin asked about digitizers last week.
I did. I did.
I was like, wow, Kevin's asking about digitizers. Something must be up. No, it's cool. Yeah. We're having a good time. This is great.
No, for sure. Yeah. And again, that's like one of those things, because it's like you obviously see, we all get the calls. We all get the, and I'm like, man, one of these people who's calling is probably actually pretty good. Like, I don't want to flesh that out. Like, I want to know like whose people are using and what are you paying, you know? So.
You're just too nervous to post in the Facebook groups because then you'd be exposed.
Exactly. I'm gonna get roasted. Yeah.
Hey, pronouncers, so. Thank you guys for joining us, Kevin. Thank you for being able to share.
Dude, yeah.
This,
yeah. Thanks for having me.
Coaster of a story. This is awesome. We'll see you guys on the next episode. We'll see you guys at what else? Long Beach, I guess. That would probably be the next event. So, thanks again for listening to this week's episode of the Pronouncers Podcast. See you in the next one. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.